Thank you. And we're moving right along. So 25 is rural banking overview. Staff report.
Thank you, Chair Montesino. I'm going to be giving this staff report today on behalf of Bella Cressman, our real property specialist who is still out on maternity leave. I just want to thank her for all of her hard work setting me up for success for this presentation. Next slide. So this was a request made by the commission back in September to come with an informational item today at the December meeting to talk about rail banking and educate the commission and the public about what rail banking is about. And today I'm going to give some background, give the definition of rail banking, go through a simplified version of what the process looks like, and talk a bit about how rail banking could apply to the branch line. And then we'll have time, obviously, for questions and discussion after that. Next slide. The 32-mile Santa Cruz branch rail line was built over a century ago and purchased by the RTC in 2012 to preserve the corridor for future public transportation. At the time of acquisition, freight activity was declining, and the corridor, including 37 bridges, more than 100 culverts, and over 100 public and private grade crossings, had fallen into significant disrepair. Today, the line supports limited freight operations in Watsonville for three customers and recreational service by Roaring Camp on a portion of the line. Long-term public vision for the corridor includes a multi-use trail and passenger rail, concepts developed through multiple studies and culminating in the zero-emission passenger rail and trail project concept report before the commission as item 26 on today's agenda. Next slide. With the acquisition, the RTC became the owner of the property while a freight easement remained for a designated common carrier. Since then, the RTC has held administration, coordination, and license agreements or ACL agreements with private railroads to provide limited freight service, and that's been our preservation strategy to date. The current ACL outlines two phases of repairs as shown on the screen here. First phase covering the southernmost 7 miles of the branch line, largely completed in 2020, and a second phase intended to support recreational excursion service on the remaining 25 miles, shown in red on the screen. That second phase has not advanced, and our current railroad operator, Progressive Rail, has not initiated freight service or recreational service north of Lee Road. Next slide. A comprehensive bridge inspection program from 2019 to 2021 found substantial deficiencies along the corridor. Estimated repair costs are $48 to $64 million in 2021 dollars. Those obviously would be escalated pretty significantly to today's dollars, not including major trestle replacements, which would be required to minimally serve freight loads. Existing funding, including Measure D rail funds, is far below what is sufficient to bring the line up to a state of good repair, leaving the line north of Watsonville inoperable for freight for the foreseeable future. Next slide. Just want to illustrate a bit, because before I was the executive director, I was the engineer who was out on the line trying to make these repairs. Of the 37 bridges that we own for the branch line, there are 20 timber trestles. These structures originally meant as temporary stopgap solutions until revenues from freight service were sufficient to replace these bridges with a more permanent steel or concrete structure. These trestles require frequent repairs to serve freight operations and would ultimately need full replacement for passenger rail. Examples shown on the screen, there's a Capitola trestle where major pile and bracing replacement is needed, as shown, and the wrought iron section, which is not shown, over Soquel Creek needs to be replaced in order to serve freight loads. Another timber trestle that isn't as visually available. And part of our rural parts of the line is on the right side. It's near Harkin Slough. And what's shown here is a vertical pile, which is supposed to be supporting the weight of the bridge. And that pile is dangling in the air. And this was my tape measure. I was measuring how deep the scour was. And this actually, the bridge was in danger of collapsing under its own weight. And we had to do a emergency repair in 2020, right about when the pandemic hit. Next slide. The corridor is also vulnerable to coastal erosion and storm damage, as seen during the 2017 and 2023 storms. We've got a washout shown on the screen from 2017, and we continue to seek disaster relief funds, reimbursement of those funds for these repairs. And then on the left is one of the most vulnerable parts of our line at Manresa State Beach near La Selva area, showing the coastal erosion and some of the challenges that we have in preserving our corridor out there. Next slide. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, widespread abandonment of freight rail lines was occurring across the country, which resulted in fragmentation of linear corridors, making future reactivation difficult and expensive. Shipping by rail was declining due to the ease and convenience of shipping goods by truck. To address this, the Rails to Trails Act of 1983 was initiated to preserve corridors for future rail use and allowing interim use, such as a trail or other non-freight rail use. Next slide. The rail banking process generally has four steps as outlined on this slide. It starts with initiation of abandonment. This could be done most commonly by the common carrier. It could also be done by another party through adverse abandonment, which is not preferred. Secondly, an interested sponsor files a petition for interim use with the Surface Transportation Board, and that essentially is volunteering to take on the maintenance and liability associated with the right-of-way in exchange for using the corridor for interim uses. Next, a negotiation takes place between the common carrier and the sponsor to negotiate an interim use agreement. This could take a very short amount of time, or it could take several years. Finally, a corridor is rail banked once an interim use agreement is signed and it's filed with the Surface Transportation Board. The total time frame is between 6 and 18 months and could vary greatly. Next slide. Opposition to rail banking could complicate and delay the process. The process starts with initiation of abandonment, which is done by either the common carrier. If the common carrier is not willing to file for abandonment, a third party can file for adverse abandonment. Opposition by other railroads could also delay the process if they claim that rail banking would result in severing them from the national rail network and no longer able to carry goods. Next slide. Here's a map showing the railroads in our county, including our branch line that goes from Pajaro to Davenport, Roaring Camp, who owns the Felton line that goes from Santa Cruz up to Felton, shown in blue. And finally, on the bottom right corner of the map, there's the Central Coast Corridor, which is our connection to the National Rail Network in Pajaro at the Pajaro Junction. Roaring Camp, who owns the Felton line, has opposed the concept of rail banking in the past because it would leave them as a stranded segment severed from the national rail network. Next slide. Roaring Camp is currently not connected to the national freight network from the Felton line because the branch line is in poor condition and the RTC does not have the funding needed to fix it. Roaring Camp does have a trackage use agreement that allows the beach train to run between Maple Street and Santa Cruz and the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. Rail banking the branch line would not prevent the beach train from reaching the boardwalk unless that agreement were changed. Rail banking also would not affect Roaring Camp's common carrier status on its own tracks. Next slide. Some potential benefits. It would allow RTC to use railroad easements for other public transportation purposes when freight service is no longer active, and it resolves recurring property disputes over the right-of-way. Rail banking keeps the corridor intact, allows for an interim trail to be built in the near term, and still preserves the right-of-way for future passenger rail. There's a lot of ideas out there. We heard a lot today already from the Personal Rapid Transit folks. There's ideas about, you know, enhanced bus service on the branch line or some sort of trolley concept. All those things share one thing in common. They are not compatible with freight. None of these options can move forward unless freight service is formally discontinued through rail banking or another process. Next slide. Here's a map showing the level of ownership of the RTC rail right-of-way. Without rail banking, the RTC would need to acquire additional rights in the form of easements to build the trail within the branch line right-of-way. From time to time, the RTC's level of ownership is disputed, which results in lawsuits that can be expensive and that risk delaying our projects along the branch line. Going through the rail banking process would eliminate disputes regarding level of property ownership and the need to acquire additional easements to build the coastal rail trail. Next slide. There's options on how RTC could proceed to use the inoperable portions of the corridor for an interim trail while preserving the branch line for passenger rail in the long term. Since the current operator, Progressive Rail, is not willing to initiate abandonment at this time, the RTC could wait out the term of the current ACL agreement, which goes through 2028, and then we could either find a new common carrier who's going to be maybe, you know, cooperative and doing what RTC would like to do with the line. Or the RTC could choose to become the common carrier. That would be a new undertaking for our agency. You know, but we own this freight line, and if we want to use it, we might need to think about doing that. We could also modify the agreement with Progressive Rail. And that would be contingent on Progressive Rail's willingness to negotiate. We could also, prior to the term of the agreement, we could terminate the ACL agreement and either hire a common carrier or become the common carrier. So these are just options because right now, you know, if we wanted to do a process to use our line for in the interim for anything other than freight, we would need to consider these options. Alternative designations other than rail banking is being explored by staff, including embargo and discontinuance. However, the filing of these alternative designations must be done by the common carrier and therefore are contingent on the cooperation of Progressive Rail. Next slide. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you for that. Any Commissioner Schiffer?
Yes, I have a few questions. Would you put up the slide on the process, please?
I'm getting the weeds.
So the first stage is abandonment initiated by either the common carrier or another. Whoa. Yeah, a visual show here. I just want to be clear that before an agreement for rail banking can be reached, abandonment has to be approved. Is that the case?
It has to be initiated. So what the first step in the abandonment process is to file for abandonment with the STB.
Okay, and
full
then
abandonment would be a completely different process.
Full abandonment.
And if I can add a little bit more to that too, there is also, as part of that process, there's a process called the offer for financial assistance, which is where another rail carrier could come in and try to make the case that they can run the rail line economically.
So would this be part of the process where the abandonment application is initiated by the common carrier or under adverse abandonment when it's initiated by someone else?
So the OFA, the offer for financial assistance, would exist if the process were instituted by the common carrier. It would also be a process if there was adverse abandonment.
So there is a step in there where there is this offer for...
Correct.
Okay. How would adverse abandonment work? The process just shows kind of the sponsor files a petition for interim use. Is the sponsor the commission? Who would be the sponsor?
I would think it would be the commission. And then just to clarify, adverse abandonment could be any third party. However, I'm going to state it again. I said it in my presentation and in the staff report. It's not the preferred path forward. And the reason is, taking a kind of an adverse action and then needing to negotiate with that party, you know, it doesn't really start negotiations off in a positive way. And so it could be, you know, a longer process in that way. So I would think, you know, if we're really serious about being successful, that we don't do adverse abandonment.
The other sort of related question where it says the common carrier and sponsor negotiate an interim use agreement. That interim use agreement is really essentially a rail banking agreement. Is that what people mean by rail banking?
Yeah, it results in rail banking, but it also requires the sponsor to maintain the railroad right of way during the time period that they're sponsoring entity and have the interim status.
So what happened? I'm sorry. Go finish.
All I was going to say is the attempt here is if you think about the purpose of rail banking being to preserve the line and to preserve the linear right of way, if you will. When you have a common carrier, the common carrier has the maintenance obligation for the rail line right of way, if you will. When you have rail banking, the sponsor has that same responsibility for maintaining the right of way so that it could be preserved for future use for rail.
Okay. Now, what if the common carrier, which in this case is Progressive Rail, refuses to negotiate an interim use agreement? What happens then?
Delay, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is a unique situation in the sense that there's only approximately two and a half years left on the current ACL. Progressive does have obligations to make sure that the line is maintained. And we have advised the commission previously in closed session of options that are available to the commission if Progressive were to not maintain its obligations under the ACL.
So this is on the one hand, this is the process. On the other hand, we have the city and county have grants that have to be activated or starting construction in a year and a half. In an adverse process, whether it's adverse abandonment or the failure of the common carrier to agree to negotiate an interim use agreement, that, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, of course, that can take several years. Is that not the case?
Correct. There's significant risk there.
So, yep. I mean, moving forward with this process, when we know that there is strong opposition in certain portions of the community, and perhaps even with rail operators, could very much threaten the grants that currently are available for the rail trail segments.
The grants that are already at risk, yes.
Yes.
Further put them at risk.
Right. I'm just wanting to understand publicly what it would mean to move forward with the abandonment and rail banking process in a context where there's strong community opposition, and that it makes the potential of successfully meeting the grant obligations riskier than it already is. Okay, so I'm not getting a disagreement, so I think that's correct. So those are my questions. Thank you.
I have a question for your not recommendations, but options that we have. Can you put out that that slide? Because one of the last ones. How long? It seems like it's beneficial for us to become the common carrier. Whether you know we terminate or we come to an agreement with Progressive, how long would that take?
Well, if you were to come to agreement, that would not take very long to do. That the approval process for the transfer of a common carrier, according to RTC's Railway Council, is about 30 days. That's after you have agreement. You would have to come to agreement though first. So you'd have to negotiate with Progressive Rail and come to that agreement. But the process for approving it is relatively short at the STB.
Thank you. That was my question. Commissioner Clark.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple questions, most likely directed towards you, Director Christensen. First of all, thank you for that report. I thought that it was well written. I thought that it answered the questions that we had and provided a good base understanding of the process. So thank you for your time and attention on that. Taking a look at the current freight operations that are happening down in South County area, do we know the current volume or frequency of the freight service on the southernmost 3 miles and how many customers are actively served?
Yes, we get updates quarterly from the railroad. I believe the last quarter there were 28 carloads and the quarter prior to that were 14. And so I think they're averaging just under 100 carloads per year. And there are a couple of active customers, three. And, that can change, obviously, as demand changes. Sometimes there's new customers. Sometimes customers decide to ship different ways. But currently there's three, yeah.
Give or take in that ballpark at least, right? So if we were to rail bank, how would that affect existing freight customers in South County?
Well, it would be done for the section of the line that's north of Watsonville. So our line is 32 miles long and it goes by mileposts, right? So milepost 3 is Lee Road approximately. So I would think that any kind of official either rail banking or other kind of halting of officially of freight service would be from milepost 3 north and not affect the existing freight operations in Watsonville.
So essentially freight can carry on as it is currently and perhaps even expand down in that region for any potential customers.
Correct. And also, I showed a slide with a map that showed the current use of the line. I think it was one of the first slides, but that those current uses would be unaffected by rail banking.
Okay. Yeah, the portion in blue there on that map.
Right.
So is there a freight load quota in the ACL between the RTC and Progressive Rail?
Remember what it is. There is. There is one, and I'm looking up the numbers right
okay.
now.
Okay. And do we believe that they are meeting that that freight load quota?
My recollection is that they are not meeting that right now, but I'm confirming that.
Okay. Section 8. And that would concur with my information. What I believe is that the current carrier is not meeting the quota that's in the ACL. So based on that, couldn't that essentially put the carrier in default of the terms of the ACL since they're not meeting that quota that we agreed to?
Again, Commission, if I may answer that, we've advised the Commission of these issues in closed session, and absent the consent of the board, I wouldn't recommend that I be answering those kinds of
questions. That's fair enough. I won't ask you to answer that then. So taking a look at our definition of rail banking, as I looked at this and just kind of helped me understand this, but in your report, you indicate rail banking provides the opportunity to repurpose rail rights of way for transportation uses with the stipulation that the corridor may be converted back to freight rail uses at any time. So essentially, the line that we have, it's all about freight, right? It's all about that freight. And if we were to do anything other than freight, am I correct that we would technically need to rail bank even if we're going to move passengers, because passengers aren't considered freight?
So the project concept that we developed for zero emission passenger rail, that is compatible with freight. That concept is compatible with freight. But if we wanted to do anything other than that in the near term, then you're right that any other uses are not compatible with freight. So it might make sense. Yep.
If I could add to that just a bit too. So where we have the fee interest, which is the majority of the line, RTC can decide to use it for what it desires to use it for, setting aside the grant obligations that came along with the proposition funds. It's where you have the easements where that becomes an issue. And those easements are quite old, as the commission is aware, and they sometimes talk about railroad. They don't necessarily talk about whether it's freight or passenger. At the time they were executed, it was likely freight because that was back in the early 1900s. And so there is some issue of interpretation of those agreements as to whether or not you can do passenger rail and freight rail under the existing easements.
Okay. Thank you. That dovetails perfectly into my next question here. Is I understand there's places on the line that we own it. We own the real estate. There's places where we simply have an easement, basically permission or a right to use this, right? And then there's portions that are in dispute in terms of ownership on that, right? So in looking at that, what are some complications that could arise with these properties if we proceed with a use other than freight and if we don't rail bank?
So in a very generic sense, you could get into a dispute with the property owners where we have an easement interest. And RTC has easements that are in the form of written documents, because RTC received everything that the railroad had before. And in some instances, they might be prescriptive easements. The railroad had been using it for a long time. They have a right to do it. It gets recognized under federal law, state law. And so some of our easements are not well defined. The rail banking allows the use for alternative transportation purposes while you preserve the line. And it resolves the issues of kind of the easement versus the fee owner that exists right now. We do have some of those right now. As the commission is aware, we're in a quiet title action with a couple of property owners as to whether we have the fee and they have the easement, or they have the easement, or they have the fee and we have the easement.
Okay. So for segment center development, like looking at segments 8 through 11, how would rail banking simplify right-of-way issues in areas where RTC holds only easements? Is that a similar sort of an answer?
According to our real property staff and council, we own fee for the full, 8 through 11 section.
Great. And my final question here, thanks to my fellow commissioners for enduring here. But so one of the committees I serve on, we address the rail line easements and encroachments. And we've been working on mitigations along the encroachments, and most notably the encroachments that are happening on the mobile home parks between 30th and 38th, right? So now, it's been my understanding that if we build the ultimate trail, and do rail as well, we need every inch of that easement of our right of way through there in order to be able to accomplish this. And additionally, we're going to be required to certify that right away by about this time next year. Am I correct?
Correct.
So if we continue with the ultimate trail through this area, will we be required to displace low-income households and seniors by Christmas time next year in order to accomplish this?
By proceeding with the ultimate trail, we would need to remove those encroachments because they're in direct conflict with the improvements.
And so conversely, if we were a rail bank and build the interim trail through the stretch, that will allow us more time to work out a mitigation and work through this encroachment issue as well. And we may not have to displace low income or senior by Christmas time next year, correct?
It's the RTC's policy to resolve encroachments. However, if the encroachments are not in direct conflict with the needs of the commission or the projects under development, that we could enter into a fair market lease for those property owners to continue using the portion of the line. What we have to avoid is a gift of public funds, which would be illegal. And so we would have to, I mean, there's really two options when we become aware of an encroachment is we either have to work towards removing it or we have to charge fair market for the public land that the private property is using it for.
But certainly if we were to build an interim trail, it would remove any urgency and it would buy us a little bit of time to try to soften the landing for some of these encroachments, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Great. That's it for my questions. Thank you so much.
Commissioner Lowen, and then Commissioner Conan.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to finalize one answer that we gave. So that under the ACL, the requirement after the fourth year, which is what we're beyond that now, is 250 freight cars per calendar year.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Commissioner Hurst, you had a question?
I have a lot of questions because this is pretty convoluted and complicated in many respects. I hear that it can be possible to have both freight and passenger rail, that they are compatible under certain circumstances. Is that what I heard?
Correct.
Well, I know that that's existed in the past because certainly a lot of people in the past moved on rail to Capitola and Santa Cruz through Watsonville. And certainly freight in the past moved as well. So I understand that things do change and rules and regulations change, but there is a past history on the branch line of passenger service, passenger transport, and freight transport. And so the question in my mind is what can we do to enhance both of those possibilities, when you think of all the tourists that want to come to Santa Cruz and Capitola and even Aptos, that, and how many cars they bring along. I think that having a more clear understanding of what these rules and regulations and what happens if you touch the tracks with future grants, what happens there. A lot of unknowns. And so let's keep exploring the unknowns and try and get more concrete answers out of it.
Commissioner Koenig.
Thank you, Chair. Well, thank you very much for this report. I think it helps clarify some of the common misperceptions about rail banking. Rail banking is often, we've heard often repeated throughout our community that if we were to rail bank, we would lose the easements and private property owners would take control of bits and pieces of the corridor and it would be lost forever. What I'm hearing you say is that's simply not the case, that in fact, rail banking preserves the easements and is the exact tool that the federal government came up with to do so. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. So let's all just be very clear about that because, again, this has been perpetuated over and over again. I think people have referred to abandonment. And what I appreciate about this is that it's so dang confusing. This is the first time I think I've ever really fully understood the relationship between abandonment and rail banking, abandonment first step, Railbank and would cause those easements to revert. Railbanking solution that maintains those easements. So I think we all just need to be very clear about that. I hope the press will repeat that, because anyone who goes on after this meeting, if you're present and tells people in the community that railbanking means easements revert, you're lying at this point, because you have now heard the truth of what railbanking does. Preserves the easements, preserves the corridor. So just a few very technical questions. Is it still adverse abandonment if we own the line, if the RTC, which owns the line, and this is actually not an uncommon case at all, right? It's very frequent throughout the country that public entity or trail group owns a line and they have a common carrier. Is it still adverse abandonment if it's our own line, even if we're not the common carrier?
So if it were our own line and there was no other line connected to it, then it would not be adverse abandonment because that entity would be doing it. But because there's the line that Roaring Camp operates on, that is their own line for which they are a common carrier on, if our line were taken out of the interstate system, if you will, then their segment would be stranded. And so our railway council has advised that could be a circumstance that would result in what would be referred to as adverse abandonment.
Gotcha. Right. So the adverse abandonment comes into play when it comes to the Felton line, which we'd be rolling the dice with on whether or not the STB would approve abandonment or rail banking of the Santa Cruz branch line without the same happening for the Felton line. Is it true that if you rail bank, you must have a trail agreement or an interim use agreement in place?
Correct.
So basically, if, you know, it came to rail banking and the STB did say that the Felton line would have to be rail banked as well, there would need to be a trail agreement in place in order for that line to be preserved.
Correct. But even if, as Sarah indicated in her presentation, even if you rail banked a portion of our line, they remain common carriers on their line and their line can continue to operate. It doesn't have to be rail banked. It could continue to operate.
I thought you just told me that we would have to file for adverse abandonment on their portion of the line if...
No, what I'm... The creation... So if you create a stranded segment, our railway council has advised that may require an adverse abandonment situation that relates to the Felton line, because this hypothetical assumes that we have permission from Progressive or we're the common carrier and we're making the decision on our line. And so under that circumstance, there is the potential that the SCB would look at that as an adverse abandonment, and they would have to make a determination on that.
Okay. How certain are we that we own the corridor and fee for segments 9 through 11?
Certain.
Okay. I mean, that's good. I appreciate you sharing that. Not 100% certain. I mean, first of all, actually, I want to thank the Mid-County Democratic Club. They had Megan S. Largent of Lewis Rice, who specializes in rail banking and takings cases, come and speak to the group. And, you know, she basically analyzes deeds for a living and helps property owners then get their, just compensation from the federal government for takings when rail easements are converted to trails. Which, of course, is the whole point of the rail banking law. And she said one of the things that she looks for in there is right of reversion, which I have seen in some of the deeds, as right of reversion being indicative of an easement being in place. So I'm glad to hear we have some level of certainty. It seems like there's still a chance that issues could come up, which leads me to my last question. If we don't rail bank, build a trail, and someone files a takings case, and then we say, shoot, wait, they actually have a good case, and we decide to start the rail banking process. Maybe we can get it done, but the case precedes the rail banking application. Will the federal government still pick up the tab for the taking?
So we haven't asked Railway Council that specific question. That there may be exposure to RTC in that circumstances because you would have effectuated the use of the right-of-way before the rail banking. On that hypothetical, I mean, and that hypothetical assumes that you don't have the right to do that.
Right. Okay.
It might be a temporary taking issue.
Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe it's the less, the damages or the taking is considered less. And then, actually, I misspoke. I do have one last question, which is, if we don't rail bank, is it true that if it's not, the line's not rail banked, you cannot remove the tracks?
That's not necessarily true. I don't know if you want to weigh in, Steve.
As we've talked about with the commission previously, there are different ways to take the line out of service. So Sarah's mentioned embargo, OPSL, discontinuance, and some of them do not allow removal of any tracks at all, whereas others do allow. And then the question is it for a temporary period of time? Because you're designating the stretch of the line as essentially out of service to shippers. That's what the purpose of these things, these procedural mechanisms are, is to advise shippers that you can't ship to those particular locations. And so you may be able to remove tracks through some of those procedures.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Follow-up questions?
As soon as, because I just a thought, and I'll get back to Commissioner Shepard. So thank you for the hard work and, some clarity on this, because I know Commissioner Shepard and myself were asking about this, because like I said, I view this, there's two camps out there in the community, and both have construed or take positions on certain, what rail banking is. So, this is becoming a great opportunity to provide some clarity. So, Commissioner Schiffer.
I wanted to follow up on a couple of your questions having to do with whether the RTC could terminate the ACL agreement, and how long that would take. Mm-hmm. The response was it wouldn't take very long if the common carrier agreed. What if the common carrier doesn't agree? What would that do to the timing? Because I agree with the definition or the result of a successful rail banking process. It would allow for the rail to go on in the future. It would allow for all sorts of options. My concern is, how do you get there from here, given the opposition to it that we know exists? And to the extent that opposition could reasonably be thought to extend the time before rail banking could be approved, to the extent that the grants that we have for the trail are lost, I think that's a potential real problem. So how long would it take for the RTC to terminate the agreement without the approval of the common carrier?
So the termination provisions in the ACL do provide a requirement that the terminating party, so in this case RTC, would provide notice of the default to Progressive, the common carrier. They have 30 days to cure the default, or after that, then RTC can take action to terminate the agreement.
And what does that mean, that the RTC takes action? Can that action be challenged, or
So what it means is the board would have to take an action to terminate the agreement. Any action by the board could be challenged in court.
Okay.
I'm not saying it would be successful. I'm just saying that it is possible.
The second question has to do with if the RTC terminates the agreement and the RTC becomes a common carrier, would the RTC itself have obligations to maintain the freight easement? Or then the RTC would then, instead of agreed upon abandonment or rail banking, it would be the RTC proceeding on its own. But could that be challenged, just like it could be challenged in any event?
Well, if RTC has the common carrier status, so in your hypothetical, RTC terminates, takes over the common carrier. Once they have the common carrier status, they have all the rights that a common carrier has, which could include issues such as terminating service on the line, abandoning service on the line. They have that right. Could someone challenge those? Another interested party, a shipper, could potentially challenge it. Another railroad, Roaring Camp, could potentially challenge it.
And that would, then there'd be a process to try to figure out what to do.
There may be a process before the STB. That's right.
Okay. I'm my concern is a timing concern. And I think the whole commission is really committed to not losing the grants and getting a trail. And so, you know, the real concern is, to what extent does going through a rail banking process add additional risk to the, you know, to the grants that we have. I did want to respond to one concern about encroachments on the line. We're going to hear later on that, in fact, the proposal that's been brought to the commission is only to move forward with the interim trail on segments 8 through 10. So to the extent that there's a concern about lower income people losing their housing, as I understand that, that's in segment 11. That's not in segments 8, 9, and 10. Am I right?
That's incorrect. The specific encroachments are within segment 10 of the Coastal Rail Trail.
So the mobile home parks are in segment 10?
Correct.
Oh, I thought they were in segment 11. Okay. And the final thing I want to ask about, you know, we hear about possible lawsuits around the easements, but the easements, as I understand it, are for the little area between the tracks themselves or on the tracks and the property. As I remember, when the commission was going for permission for segment 5, there were easements that had to be acquired because the trail wasn't where we thought it was going to be. And so do we have any estimate of what worst case it would cost to have to purchase the easements if that was necessary?
Not at this time. So as I mentioned, we're certain that we have full fee ownership of segment, the area between segment 9 and 11. And therefore, you know, we haven't done any appraisals. So if we needed to acquire rights to build our trail projects, we'd have to do an appraisal and go through the formal process of issuing an offer to the, you know, whoever the owner is, and go through the process to purchase or acquire this easement, which we haven't done. So we don't know the...
Assuming that we think what you're saying, we believe we own the...
Correct.
So there are no easements. If somebody believed that there was an easement, they would have to challenge the commission.
Correct.
And then they would have to provide evidence. At that point, we might have to do an appraisal. But it's, you know, if from what you're saying, the commission is... Staff is confident that at this point there are no easements during as part of that segment.
Correct, between 9 and 11.
Right. Okay. I just want to get a better understanding about what the risks are. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner
DeSerpa.
I'd like to clarify the portion of rail banking that potentially could cure some of the issues with property owners. So the Mid-County Dems, you know, had a presentation by, I think, Megan Larchin from the law firm in St. Louis, which is sort of the preeminent law firm that deals with these types of corridors and private property rights. She said she's pulled every single deed on our corridor And there are a number, and some of them go back to the 1800s, right, and late 1800s, and they have to be carefully looked at, carefully read to see what they say. And in doing so, she would represent potentially, I mean, other attorneys could as well, she would represent the property owner in a takings case. If the line were rail banked, the RTC, my understanding from her presentation is that the RTC would not be responsible for the cost of the taking, that there is an apportionment within the federal government that is set aside specifically for these things, and that the federal government pays for not only the attorney's fees, also pays for the takings. Is that correct?
That is my understanding of how rail banking works as well.
So that's a benefit of rail banking. That is, I think, correct, very important to protect the RTC from future costs in the event that there are takings that need to be paid out. Correct?
That is correct. I agree with that.
Okay. I just wanted to sort of break that down a little further. So I see just, I know this is a very political issue, but rail banking to me, not only does it preserve the line for future rail, it also protects the RTC and the county from these types of takings actions. I don't really see any downside here to rail banking. Are there any cons that you can talk about?
If the process were opposed, it could delay the process significantly. And, if we're trying to finish the process before we build a project, like Coastal Rail Trail project, then it further risks the grant funds that are already at risk of being lost because of our cost overruns for the ultimate trail. So
understood. I will say that in that same presentation, Megan, who's had a lot of experience with rail bank corridors, said that if we had started like in October when she made the presentation, the rail banking would be successfully completed likely by the summertime. That is what she said. And I understand if there are objections or, there are other complications, but I was surprised to hear that because the narrative has been that it's going to take forever. And I was surprised to hear her say that it would take just a few short months to get something like that accomplished. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Jensen.
Yeah, thank you. Just one follow-up question. First of all, thank you, Commissioner Clark, for highlighting the timeline that we're looking at for the encroachments. One follow-up question. With the RTC becoming the common carrier, in the contract, is there a buyout clause or a clause of for us to get out of that agreement with the ACL right now?
The ACL agreement does have some provisions that anticipate a potential buyout. This particular set of circumstances doesn't exactly fit that, but it did. The agreement does anticipate what could happen if certain things didn't happen under the agreement. So, for instance, there's a whole second phase of transportation that has never happened under the ACL. And so when that agreement was negotiated back in 2018, they anticipated certain circumstances that had a buyout, and it was in the order of about $300,000. But it doesn't cover absolutely every situation.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to go out to the public. We'd like to weigh in this time in the community. If you need, can line up. I'm going to bring back to the commission. And one thing, because I was listening and tabling, some people were, thank you for allowing me for people to speak. A lot of people, talked about a lot of things. But one of the things that I didn't hear was the actual just report of rail banking. Nobody argued the facts what rail banking is. And that's what the presentation was good. So thank you, staff. Everybody, put their opinions about whether they liked it or not, whether trail or train, But, you know, the facts are the facts. And, you know, that's what we wanted this person to say. So, with that, I think, you know.
I would move the staff recommendation.
Second.
So it's been moved and second. So,
Commissioner Kitos Carter has her hand up.
Okay. Chair. Commissioner Kitos Carter, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't get a chance to speak earlier before going out to public comment, so I just wanted to make my comments before we vote. This is not a Fort versus Greenway issue. This is not a rich versus poor issue. But what this is a public good versus private interest issue. Okay. So on one hand, you have the trail only people who are concerned with their property values, their investments. They want to have e-bikes that they can rent out on that track. And we have significant legal risk if we remove those tracks. What is rail banking? Rail banking means we pull up the tracks and that's that. Okay, that's rail banking. That is it. It's we do not have rail anymore. They can fluff it up with semantics all they want, but that's essentially that's what it is. On the other hand, we have a both option. It's really funny to me that we have people sitting here saying, oh, this is private interest. This is private interest. How is it a private interest if it's for the public good? I don't understand. We will never have those train, the option. We will never even have the option of having the train. We've talked about this issue for 20 years. It has been blocked for 20 years. We as a county need to get it together. Other counties have figured it out. And what upsets me is that we sit here saying, oh, we can't do this. Oops, we can't do this because we are continually being blocked by private interests. And that is not okay. It is not rich versus poor. It is the haves and the have-nots. It is the people who are looking out for everyone versus the people who are looking out for their own pockets. That's really what it comes down to. And that's how Santa Cruz has been for 20 years. So that is why we are at this point. So our goal is to make everyone happy. That's what we do. We try to listen to all sides. But at the end of the day, we have both options. We have the option for future passenger rail, or we don't. That's it. Yes, no. And that is it. So thank you for allowing me to make my comments, Chair. That is all I have to say.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to take a roll call.
Commissioner Leonor?
Yes.
Commissioner Kitos Carter?
No.
Commissioner Koenig?
Aye.
Commissioner DeSerpa?
Aye.
Commissioner Alternate Shiffrin?
Aye.
Commissioner Alternate Hurst?
No.
Commissioner Montesino?
Yes.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
Commissioner Keeley? Commissioner Jensen?
Aye.
That passes with two no's.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Commissioner.
Could I just clarify that the motion was to accept the staff recommendation?
And I think, you know,
either approve or deny rail banking. It said, we got this information, we've heard a lot of input, and we're accepting the information. That's all that's been done. I hope that the recent applause is not an indication of where we're going. I really wanted to compliment the people in the audience for listening respectfully for everyone who spoke, whether they agreed or not. There's a lot of disagreement here, but everybody's been polite and a lot of applause. This isn't a popularity contest in the end. I hope that as we continue through this difficult meeting, that courtesy will be continued. So just wanted to clarify what we're really doing.
Thank you, Commissioner Shiffrin, because that's duly noted. Commissioner Hurst?
Thank you, Chair. You know, I think there's more questions than there are answers, and that's why I voted no, because I think there's more information that needs to be dug out. It's a highly politicized environment.
Point of order.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question on what we're on right now.
Yeah, okay.
Are we on an item or we're...
No, we're just...
simply going to have comments.
Yeah,
my comment about the past vote and explaining my
point of order.
My point.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to move on. And
Commissioner Montesino, I apologize. I skipped Commissioner Lynn.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay.
We were just wondering that.
Yeah, we were just checking.
So,
aye.
And Pegler, did you get
aye?
Yeah, I forgot me.
All right.
My sincere apologies.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that, it passes. So we're going to move on to